We will proceed to case number two, please. Iqbal Mathur versus the Board of Trustees of Southern Illinois University.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Counsel.
May it please the court. Sometimes being reasonable just doesn't pay, or perhaps just doesn't pay well enough in this case. First principles are straightforward enough. Prevailing party is entitled to reasonable fees. Reasonable fees are market rates and hours. Market rates are opportunity costs to the lawyer, to the attorney. Opportunity cost is best expressed as the actual billing rate of the attorneys. Yet the billing rate, the actual billing rate, were not applied in this fee petition, not as a matter of discretion or of some fact, but as we assert a fundamental error in law. In this case, the district court ignored the actual billing rates of the attorneys in favor of, or for the sole reason that it concluded, they were in excess of the market rate in Southern Illinois. The attorneys in this case, of course, were from out of town, Chicago counsel.
Judge Foreman is from Illinois, from Southern Illinois.
He is, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
Counsel, myself, and Ms. Longwell are not Chicago-based attorneys. In the absence of any impropriety in the selection of out-of-town counsel, Sir Prawley, forgive me, I can never pronounce that case right, I'll just say the Uniroyal case, holds that in the absence of any impropriety in the selection of out-of-town counsel, it is the attorney's locality that determines the rate for those lawyers if they are to be in excess of a community. But first things being first, the court made a fundamental error of law because it never determined, never made a finding that it couldn't conclude or couldn't calculate what the actual billing rates were for the plaintiff's counsel in this case. It accepted those billing rates. And under Gustin, the actual billing rate is entitled to a presumption of the market rate. That presumption carries with it a legal burden shift to the defendants to explain then why a lower rate is essential to the case. Defendants never explained why a lower rate was essential in this case, and still to this day have never explained why a lower rate would be essential. So the district court made a fundamental error of law in ignoring this presumptive effect of an actual billing rate because it accepted the actual billing rates, or at least if it didn't, it was required under Nannetti to make a finding that it somehow couldn't conclude what the actual billing rates were. There were some deficiencies. It never did that. It accepted the billing rates as is, but simply determined that those rates are in excess of what applies in Southern Illinois. That might be proper in the case if there was some impropriety in the selection of out-of-town counsel, but in this case, there was none suggested and none shown. Plaintiff, as you may recall, was a finance professor at Southern Illinois University. He intended to sue his employer for discrimination. There was an affidavit submitted in connection with the fee petition that he searched for local counsel. And every counsel he found had some connection with Southern Illinois, had some contract, some conflict of interest, or the other ones that he found were not of sufficient skill or experience he felt to handle his case.
So you're basically arguing that in a case like this, the relevant community simply is a larger community.
The relevant community in a case like this is the locality of the attorneys, the chosen counsel for the plaintiff.
In other words, in a case like this, you can't stay in that town, that county. So going somewhere else in the state is appropriate.
Correct.
That's your basic case, right?
Correct. And under Gustman, I think the holding there was fairly straightforward, and it says that if you have the actual rates of the attorney, the district court judge on the fee petition cannot disregard those rates simply because it can determine that there's an average rate in that locality that's different. So he has to accept the actual billing rates if there's sufficient evidence for that.
What is our standard of review? Abuse of discretion?
No, Your Honor. We submit that your standard here is de novo review because the district court in this case made fundamental errors of law in the application of the principles of law under Gussman and under Uniroyal. That, in the first of all, the legal presumption, if you have the billing rate, it's presumptively the market rate, and the burden shifts to the defendants to explain why a lower rate is essential. And then, two, if in fact the court had to look to other evidence to determine the actual billing rate, the locality is the attorney's locality, not the forum of the court, unless there is some impropriety shown in the selection of out-of-town counsel, which, again, wasn't shown in the case at bar. Based on those errors of law, not errors of fact, the review here then is de novo, and we ask that the court order the district court to recalculate fees based on the actual rate that were tendered. Again, under Ciprolli and Uniroyal, there was no improvidence shown in selection of out-of-town counsel. I was mentioning the plaintiff's affidavit submitted in connection with the brief. He attempted to find local counsel as a professor of finance of Southern Illinois University. His affidavit established, and it went uncontradicted, that he could not find local counsel who didn't have a connection to SIU, didn't have some conflict of interest, and therefore, and it will be remembered as a professor of finance, that he often testified as an expert witness for management side attorneys. And a management side attorney referred him to Chicago-based counsel Marilyn Longwell, who agreed to hear to meet with him and accepted his case. And I can't think of too many lawyers when we're talking about the attorney shifting provisions, which are designed to have private attorneys act as private attorneys general and root out discrimination claims and retaliation claims. I can't think of too many attorneys who would jump at the chance for a six-hour drive down to Carbondale to represent somebody suing the university, Southern Illinois University. If we're to encourage the kind of behavior that fee-shifting statutes want to encourage, then we've got to supply an adequate market rate, the attorney's locality, that market rate, in such a case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Tim Eaton. I'm here on behalf of the appellee. Your Honors, I believe the fundamental...
Can you talk a little louder, please?
Yes, I will. I believe the fundamental flaw in counsel's position is that they presented an actual billing rate for the time in question. We'll get to the relevant community in a minute. They did not. What was presented to the lower court were current rates in the year 2001, that's unrebutted. In every affidavit that was submitted, both Ms. Longwell and in all of the affidavits, they spoke to rates in 2001. This case was pending between 1995 and 2001. It was tried in 1997. The only evidence in this record that the district court had to consider with respect to the actual rate being charged in any community, and in this particular affidavit, Southern Illinois, was the affidavit submitted by the defendant, SIU, Mr. Gross's affidavit, where he said he had handled a similar matter, the Wickman case, which eventually was appealed before this court and affirmed, where the complaint was filed in 1995, as in this case, and tried in 1997, as in this case, and he established that rate. The use of current rates is appropriate where the lower court is considering an adjustment for delay in payment. I agree that the United States Supreme Court has said in Missouri versus Jenkins that you can consider a current rate to make up for the delay in payment. But that is different from establishing first an actual rate. We do not know from Ms. Longwell anywhere in this record what she was billing clients in 1995, 1996, 1997, 1998, 99, or the year 2000. None of her affidavits address that. All of the affidavits suggest that a reasonable rate in the year 2001 was appropriate. And in the Guzman case versus Unifus, the court did have a burden-shifting provision that once the lawyer establishes the actual billing rate, that that's presumptively the market rate. But before that presumption takes hold, you have to have an actual rate. Here you did not. And I submit there was no shifting of that burden, because once the court does not have information with respect to actual billing rate, then this court has said the next best evidence are similarly situated attorneys in the relevant community and what they're billing. And in this case, the only evidence with respect to what similarly situated attorneys in the relevant community had submitted for those years in question was the affidavit of the defendant.
Now, of course, the court didn't make any, the argument that you're making that she didn't provide those years, she didn't provide the rates for those years, the court didn't really address that in commenting. I mean, in making a determination as to what rate would apply. The court just basically said they're in excess of the market rates of Southern Illinois, not that there was, the court had to speculate as to what her rate was in those other years from 95 to 2002.
Your Honor, I agree, but what the court did say is that they talked about the fact that the defendant objected to the attorney rates charged by Marilyn Longwell and Associates and attorney John Madden.
Right.
Then he says, upon review,
right.
And he goes on and makes his holding.
Right. He says, upon review, the court finds the attorney rates charged by Longwell and Madden are in excess of market rates. And then he talks about market rates in Illinois, but he doesn't say anything about these are her current rates versus what were the rates between 95 and 91.
You're correct. But the defendant's objections were premised on two matters. First of all, they did object to the fact that there were no rates that were for 95 and 97, two of the critical years that were being considered. And those objections, he's saying, I'm reviewing. Should he have been more specific? Perhaps. But I believe that the standard of review, Judge Coffey, and I, my answer is different. I believe that it's abuse of discretion. In fact, I think it should be highly deferential, because on the issue of whether or not there could be lawyers in Southern Illinois that could handle this case, the response to that point in the plaintiff's fee petition of counsel of SIU was, Your Honor, you know there are cases being handled in Southern Illinois by Southern Illinois lawyers, and we ask you to take recognition of that fact. I believe the court did respond to that, and that does rise to the level of him exercising his discretion. I do not believe this is a de novo review, and again, in the People Who Care case, where there had been evidence below of the historical rates. The court was considering historical rates in that case when they were dealing with the Davis Minor firm, and that was appropriate because the judge was trying to figure out each year, and this court reversed saying that because there were a couple years missing, you were being a little bit too picky, but the historical rates were listed. They are absent here, and I submit that absent that fact, that you cannot shift then the burden to the defendant. And let me address also the community in question here. Counsel has said, unless there's something inappropriate. Well, that's not the test. There was an affidavit by the plaintiff that said, yes, I looked in Southern Illinois, I couldn't find anyone without a conflict, and secondly, I didn't find anyone, or I didn't find anyone that I felt had the skills and competence. There was also an affidavit from the other side, from a lawyer in Southern Illinois who had tried a case in Southern Illinois, an employment discrimination case, and had been successful. The trial judge also had knowledge of that area and also knowledge of the fact that Southern Illinois lawyers had tried it. So this affidavit by the plaintiff was not unrebutted. So there's nothing about impropriety here that had to be established. It's just that his point, I can't find anyone, was rebutted by the fact that there are lawyers there, and we pointed to a case that indicated that. So I submit that under an abuse of discretion standard, the district court had enough evidence. And by the way, the plaintiff had a second bite at the apple. The petition was filed, a response was filed, questioning the fact that these were not actual rates for the time in question. The court ordered another round of briefing, saying, I want to know about the reasonable rate issue. plaintiff and the defendant filed another round of briefings with more affidavits, and it was after the second round of briefing that the judge entered his opinion. So I believe this matter was fully considered by the court. He said, upon review, the issues that we raised, obviously in this appeal as well as below, was that there were no actual rates, and the only actual rates submitted to the court that the court could even consider, which were uncontradicted for the years in question, were the rates that he awarded. So we respectfully ask that this court affirm the findings below.
Thank you, counsel.
And address this question of lack of rates being submitted on behalf of the plaintiff for those years, 95 to 91.
Under Nannetti, Your Honor, if there was some deficiency, the district court was required to specify that deficiency.
Well, don't you have the obligation to introduce that evidence?
An obligation to introduce the evidence,
the rates
historically from 94 to 97.
And from 95 and 91.
Well, I submit that under Missouri v. Jenkins, where the court has expressly stated that there's to be an adjustment for delay in payment, that the actual current rates are to be used as an acceptable alternative to the alternative being you take the historical rate and make an adjustment for present value, is the language of the Missouri v. Jenkins case. So Missouri v. Jenkins says that current rates are appropriate standard to use. So no, respectfully, Your Honor, I don't think we have an obligation to submit contracts all the way from 94.
You didn't say contract, and no one used the word contract.
Well, as evidence of actual billing rates, historical rates from 94 to 97, in connection with our fee petition, we submitted actual contracts with other clients to establish opportunity costs. So what I'm saying is that how would you do that from 94 to 97? Well, there are a couple of opportunities. You could submit contracts that you had executed in 94 to 97. I think if you were to go back and, you know, this case has been pending now for 7-8 years, you're going to go back and submit, you know, contracts for a 7-year period, that just becomes more burdensome on the court. And so under Missouri v. Jenkins, where it says that current billing rates are an acceptable alternative to that, it makes sense to submit your current billing rates and have the court, you know, determine from the evidence that you submitted, the actual contracts, whether or not it can determine the actual rates. If the district court says, based on what you've presented to me, I cannot figure out what your actual opportunity cost is, what your actual rate is, it's required to say so. And it could have said so, but it never did. And more to counsel's point, their submission to the district court, as far as I recall, as I stand here, made no contention that Longwell had failed to submit evidence of historical rates from 94 and 97. The point of contention was that she didn't ever submit any other awards from any other cases. That's markedly different. Okay. And the district court, when it ordered supplemental briefing on the issue, didn't specify that it couldn't determine what the actual rate is, and it wanted more evidence on actual rates. It just said, I need more evidence on hourly rates. And when it comes out in the decision, it says, these are the rates that they charge. Its silence, I offer, means assent to the fact that it accepted those actual billing rates, and then simply determined, these are in excess of Southern Illinois for these out-of-town counsel, and therefore, I'm going to limit you to this locality of the courthouse.
Thank you,
which is an error of law. Thank you, Your Honor.
We will take the case under advisement.